This is the CSIS Global Health Interview Series at www.smartglobalhealth.org.
We are here today with Sir Richard Feachum, Professor of Global Health at both the University of California, San Francisco, and University of California, Berkeley. From 2002 to 2007, Sir Richard served as founding executive director of the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, and Undersecretary General of the United Nations. Sir Feachum, thank you for joining us today.
Great pleasure to be here.
To get us started, I was wondering if you could tell us what low-cost intervention could make the greatest difference in improving global health in the next 20 years.
Well, that's an interesting and challenging question because, of course, the global health agenda is made up of quite a long list of specific challenges and problems, each of which need their own inventions and their own scientific breakthroughs. I think if I was forced to talk about a single thing which would make the biggest difference, it would be a vaccine against HIV and AIDS. The HIV/AIDS pandemic continues to be devastating in many parts of the world. We have made much progress in providing treatment for people who are infected and need treatment, but we've made much less progress in prevention. So in some countries, the rate of new infections among teenagers and young people stays high and has not really declined at all. So a vaccine would just make a huge difference to the future of HIV/AIDS and to the health of people in many countries. And it would also be a great scientific breakthrough because it's such a difficult scientific challenge that to have done it indicates that we've solved a lot of basic scientific questions which we currently don't have answers for. More broadly, I think it is the combination of the scientific community bringing forward new tools, which can be drugs, they can be vaccines, they can be diagnostic tests, other new tools, and the ability to use those widely and quickly in developing countries. We have this gap at the moment whereby a new technology becomes widely used in the United States or in Europe, and then 15, 20 years later, it's kind of offered to the developing world, which is grossly inequitable, and a lot of people die during those 15 years when we haven't made the effort to get it out there to everyone who needs it. So solving that problem, when we have a new invention, let it be available everywhere at the same time and as quickly as possible. That would also be a great breakthrough.
So when you look out at the landscape of global health challenges, and particularly when you're speaking about gaps like this gap in technology, where are the biggest global health gaps, and is there a looming problem that the global health community needs to pay more attention to?
Well, the gaps remain very wide, and I sometimes speak about the zip code lottery of global health. So a girl born today in a poor country expects to live 40 years or less, whereas a girl born today in a wealthy country expects to live 80 years or more. This is a huge gap in life expectancy and health expectancy, depending entirely on the accident of where you're born and who your parents happen to be. This is very unjust, very destabilizing, and closing those gaps is perhaps the number one agenda item for global health over the next three, four, five decades. To achieve that, we need to attack the causes of the gaps, and we know what they are. They include things like TB, HIV, malaria, diarrhea, pneumonia, various things that make pregnant women ill and cause maternal mortality, and various things that kill newborn babies. So we have a pretty good sense of what the causes are, and we have interventions against most of those causes. I think addressing those things vigorously is a key to success over the coming decades. And one of the things we need to pay more attention to, I think, is how we do this. I call this the how of global health, or the how of development assistance, by which I mean, in the old days and up until today, we've tended to sit in Washington or sit in London or sit in Berlin and think, we know best, We will design solutions for other people in other countries, and we will come and offer those solutions pretty prepackaged and pre-thought out. Two problems with that. One is the people on the receiving end don't like that. It's disrespectful. It's not dignified for them to be brought these prearranged solutions by people who probably don't know their country very well and don't know their culture very well. And secondly, it often leads to the wrong answer, because the solution dreamt up in Washington may just not be the right solution for Malawi or for Madagascar or for Mauritius or whichever country we are working with. And so I think we need to throw away what I see as a kind of colonial overhang, a colonial heritage of we know best, to a much more modest approach of saying, our purpose is to help you in Malawi do what you have decided is most important for Malawi. So we will help you achieve what you have decided most needs to be done. We will support your policies and your programs, and we will help you with finance and with science and with technical assistance, but we won't impose on you our designs and our policies, because they should be your designs and your policies. This is what I call demand-driven global assistance or demand-driven foreign assistance. The Global Fund, I think, pioneered the operationalization. Putting that into practice is what the Global Fund does and has done. And I think there are some lessons to be learned there which the United States and others could embrace.
There's, of course, been a rapid expansion of global health players over the last decade. And you touched upon this briefly already, but how can we improve global health governance, and should we expand or create more mechanisms like the Global Fund?
There's always a big debate about this. And of course, whenever anyone proposes a new mechanism or a new institution and a proliferation of institutions or a proliferation of mechanisms, there is quite rightly a kind of howl of protest. People say, no, no, it's all too complicated. We've got too many players already. Let's please not create more players. And one of the reasons for not welcoming more players is the transaction costs in the developing countries themselves. A number of African countries have around 30 different foreign organizations helping their Ministry of Health, mm-hmm. helping to improve their health sector. And for those responsible in that country, in that Ministry of Health, this becomes a nightmare of competing priorities and different conversations with different donors, all who have come with good intentions and trying to be helpful. But tremendous chaos can result, and very high burden on the recipient countries and the recipient ministries to make sense of all these different pathways of assistance. So I think simplification rather than proliferation of new mechanisms is the way to go. Big emphasis on the demand side, supporting governments and people do what they have decided is best for them. Trying to do this in a pooled way. We've made a lot of progress in creating baskets of funding and common funding channels. We sometimes call these swaps, sector-wide approaches where different donors all put their money into the same basket, and the government can draw on that single basket for agreed programs. I think these things are all good ideas. The one additional point I would make is some people sometimes lament that we're not back in the good old days, as they see it, when there were just one or two big players and life was very simple. I don't share that view. I think to have a number of players is good. And we do now have a number of powerful players that we didn't have a few years ago. I mean, the Gates Foundation is the biggest and most dramatic example of that. And I think that's very healthy, because what it gives us is an intellectual marketplace for ideas and policies. Mm-hmm. There, instead of being a single voice saying, on this subject, the world should do this, you have a number of voices, you have a debate, and the best ideas will rise to the surface. And I think that's actually very healthy.
And what about this question of effectively strengthening health systems? So can vertically structured entities like the Global Fund or Gavi, can they be effective in strengthening health systems, or are they only responsive to specific disease issues?
Well, let me speak mainly about the Global Fund, and this may or may not apply to Gavi, but the Global Fund is the organization that I know best. The Global Fund focuses on AIDS, TB, and malaria. And I think continuing that focus is incredibly important because the job is not yet done. There is a long way to go, and we should not dilute or distract the Global Fund with other major goals or objectives. However, the Global Fund has and does make a big contribution to some aspects of health system strengthening because of what we might call the polyvalent aspects of its investment. So the Global Fund builds clinics, it employs doctors, it builds laboratories, it equips laboratories, it improves supply chain, it does many things within an HIV program or within a malaria program or within a TB program, but then those assets that are created on the ground are used for many, many purposes, which is what I mean by polyvalent. So the doctors don't only treat HIV. The supply chain doesn't only supply malaria drugs. The laboratory doesn't only test for tuberculosis. These assets have multiple purposes, and the Global Fund encourages the multiple use of these assets. So in that way, the Global Fund is making a big contribution. But I think that for the more systemic and cross-cutting task of building a health system in the low-income countries and in the middle-income countries that can deliver a wide range of services to all citizens, irrespective of their income or how isolated they are, that requires an additional effort and an additional set of deliberate building blocks, which the Global Fund would contribute to in the way that I've just described, but I don't think the Global Fund is well positioned to be a leader. I think somebody else, and my vote would be the World Bank, needs to take on that cross-cutting, systemic, very long-term health systems building task much more specifically and in a clearly devoted and focused way.
Sir Feacham, it's been a pleasure having you with us today. For interested viewers, you can see a full presentation from Sir Feacham at www.smartglobalhealth.org. And it's also worth mentioning that on November 9th, CSIS will co-host with the University of California, San Francisco, and the Kaiser Family Foundation a public discussion on why global health matters to the state of California. That forum will take place on UCSF's Mission Bay campus from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on November 9th. All are welcome.